Hello and welcome to another episode of
Trash or Treasure,
the podcast where Kim
and Amy
bring you spoiler free.
I like doing that just to keep you on the toes.
I know, you love it. This is because you make fun of me whenever I stuff up the opener, so you like feel like, just like throw just bits of paper at me to get me to stuff
add
it up.
Extra so volume.
Where are we even up to?
We do spoiler-free recaps, reviews,
and recommendations for whatever we read that week. Amy, what did we read this week?
We read Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmus.
Not sure.
I'm not sure whether you say the last S, but we all know who she is because recently Lessons in Chemistry has been a very successful Apple TV original series.
Correct. With Brie Larson.
Mm-hmm.
Someone recommended this to us.
Becca.
Oh, hi, Becca.
This is a recommend from our friend, Becca.
Who is hit and miss with her recommendation.
No, she's been doing so much better
she
of late.
She is so much more hit than miss these days. It is true.
Like,
I'll never forgive her, though, for the Gridiron book we read.
No, episode 3, people, if you want to know where we've come from and where we are now.
Audio quality is not great, though. I don't know how good our audio quality is now. I never listen.
Becca's recommend on this was enjoyable and well-written, in my humble opinion. That was Becca's review.
Oh, adorable.
So we have given it a red-hot go before, like, I read it and then I read it so fast because I wanted to watch the TV show. And then I went back and I reread it because I was like, I read it too fast to actually really process 90% of the
things. Did you watch the TV show?
Yeah.
Would you like to do the spoiler-free recap since I feel like you've not just engaged with this one time, but so many times?
Not particularly, but I'll try. Because it means that I actually have to remember people's names. Elizabeth Zott.
Yeah, she's easy.
Is brilliant. She is
she's a chemist.
Research chemist. She is fully capable of having a really fantastic position at a university and tenure or being in a research facility and doing amazing things, but it's the 1950s and she's a woman and therefore she is just not able to get ahead at all.
Yeah.
She's a single parent. She has a young daughter who's about 10, 7 to 10. She's in primary school.
No, she's like 4.
Four, she's even younger. Why do you think she was 10?
Because Elizabeth lies about her age to get her into prep. We call prep. It's kindergarten.
That's right.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you're not allowed to start kindergarten, I think, till you're 6 or 7 or something. 6, maybe. 5 or 6. And she lies about how
she's
old
like, she's ready.
Is. Yeah.
She needs to go. I'll just say that you're this old.
Yeah.
And through an incident at kindergarten, Elizabeth comes into contact with Walter, who is a producer at a TV station.
Of the afternoon programming.
The afternoon housewife time programming slot. And she powers on, basically she marches on into his office and gives him a serve for the behavior of his child.
His child is stealing her child's lunch.
She does make an excellent lunch.
And one time his child came to school with her lunch being like a bottle of ketchup or something. Like there was I think one time she came and all she had was a ladle. Like, it was not food. So he is a single dad and he's struggling as well.
So Elizabeth, Walter decides, has, like, magic.
And she is a force to be reckoned with.
She is a force to be reckoned with, but she also has just something that is very arresting. So he offers her a job as a TV host of what's called basically a cooking show.
It's a cooking show. It's called Supper at Six.
Supper at Six. It's a cooking show.
So she doesn't want to take the job. She has absolutely no interest in being on television, but they pay significantly more than what she was earning. And she was struggling, really properly struggling. And so she was like, fine, I'll do it. But she is not, and she's always approached cooking as science. That's why she loves cooking, because she's a chemist. And so she refuses to approach it as a silly thing that you just do in the kitchen and it's just a fluffy
afternoon
show.
Like, she never, ever, ever reads the auto cue.
No. And she won't.
And Walter's always been, like, holding his breath and being like, oh, just say thank the sponsor.
Yeah. And she won't ever, you know, like, she'll explain everything in a great amount of detail. Like, what's happening now is a reaction between, you know, these molecules and those molecules. It's breaking down the blah, blah acids. And so she explains everything at a scientific level to the women who are watching, and it becomes a sensation.
There's another sort of narrative about her own past and...
Yeah, it jumps forwards and back in time to essentially be like, how did she end up here as a single mum, struggling, et cetera, et cetera.
And there's a sort of narrative that goes on about her, like, career as a chemist and the challenges that she's faced in that space.
And there's a lot about Mad's father too.
Yeah.
And his life and how he got and did what he did and blah, blah, blah.
But I am going to stop now because I know I'm just going to start retelling the whole plot if that's I go into details about those.
I think
those
we'll talk about more things when we give personal, like your own kind of room.
Okay, well, you know what? Would you like to give your own personal response? Because I sort of did the spoiler-free recap.
I'm sorry, I jumped.
No, it's fine. It's clear when I need help. And I'm glad that you saw it and dived right in.
Dived right in.
So, what did you think of Lessons in Chemistry?
So, for me, this book was so much better than I expected it to be. So when I watched...
Did you watch the show first?
No.
Or were you judgmental because Becca recommended it?
Sorry, no! Becca! Oh, my gosh! None of these things. No. It was so much better than I thought it would be because when Becca recommended it, I was like, wait, isn't that a TV show? And you were like, yeah, but Becca's recommended we read the book, so we should do that first. But I, of course, watched the trailer for the Apple series. And from the trailer, I thought that this was like going to be about a lady chemist or a scientist lady who had ASD and didn't realize that she was like a symbol for feminism, was kind of like accidentally in that, found herself in that position and has to kind of have it all explained to her about how, you know, you could use this position to really help women and really like use your platform to help. And it was just going to be this like, you know, pretty white, socially awkward scientist lady learns how to be more sensitive empowered. And connected and empowered, right? And learns about her own privilege and righty roll. And I was like, I don't know. Okay. But I don't know if it's my cup of tea. But that is not what this book is about at all. So much so that I did go after I finished it. So spoilers for my spoiler, like for my
review. It's very interesting how trailers are cut, isn't it?
I know. But I actually loved the book. Loved it. Absolutely adore it. Really rate this book. I didn't get past the first episode of the series because I loved the book so much. I felt like in episode one, they had betrayed far too much of what made Elizabeth Zott, Elizabeth Zott, that I was like, nope, whoever made this doesn't get it. Or whoever made this, because I didn't watch the rest of the series, so I can't make a comment on how it progresses beyond episode one. But I was like, this is clearly being used as a vehicle to tell another story. It's not telling, like, and you could use that setting and those characters and those contexts to tell so many stories. But the one that I took away from the book didn't feel like the one they were going to explore in the TV series, so I didn't watch it. But I loved so many parts of this book. I loved how it was told. So you do jump backwards and forwards in time. And normally I find that
hard to keep track of where we are.
And I find it, this one had some very specific markers that I think made it really much easier. Like Calvin Harris? No, that's wrong. He might be a DJ. Whatever.
His first name definitely was Calvin. I can't remember his surname,
but Calvin is the daughter's father. And so I kind of, you know, like when Calvin's in it, we know we're in the past. When she is by herself, we know we're in the kind of present, the contemporary for the book kind of context. But I really found that helpful. Like I thought the writing and the sequencing, the use of that literary device of telling it out of order.
Well written.
Was so exceptionally handled.
Bang on, Becca, well written.
And it allowed me to really super care about everyone and buy into who they were so that when we jumped back to the present day, I was like already in and on board. I found that even the minor characters were really fully fleshed
out.
They
were great, the minor characters.
Everyone felt like a super real person. Harriet was phenomenal.
Harriet was fantastic.
Even the men who were awful villains, felt like fallen complete characters. Oh,
the owner of the TV station. Yes,
he was such an excellently developed character.
I'm not going to, it's a total spoiler, but that scene where Elizabeth like, she's so boss.
6:30 was majestic.
That's the dog.
6:30 is her dog, and they called him 6:30 because of a moment where Calvin calls out, like, "Who's your friend?" And she thought he said, "What time is it?" And so she shouts back, 6:30. And so the dog's name is 6:30. And I just loved it. And 6:30 and Mad were two of my favorite characters.
See, you know how I love a dog. A dog just elevates, a happy ending dog elevates every book.
Literally every dog. Every book. So I loved it. I thought more than being about women's lib or anything of that kind of nature, for me, this book was about finding out who you are and finding yourself and finding family and building family and the importance of that, the importance of that family and the idea that the more humans look for the ways that we are different and the ways that other people shouldn't belong and where the more we gatekeep as human beings, the harder it makes it for people to find love and to find family and to find place. And I thought that was, it was beautiful. The world of Elizabeth Zott was so gorgeous that by the time you kind of reach a climax point and she is so just unflappable and just unstoppable, that for the moment where she finally hesitates and you think maybe it's all going to fall apart, she's built this beautiful network. She's built, like, the family. It was just, oh, it was so beautiful. It almost made me cry. I know.
You almost heard it here, folks.
Heard it here. Very nearly made
me cry. Have there been any books we've read where you have cried?
Yes. Which recently, one? We haven't reviewed them yet. They're coming. Stand by to
see. Oh, my goodness gracious. I didn't even know what.
Proper sob in an audiobook. An audiobook made me cry.
My God, I need. Oh.
I know.
I'm going to, like, go to bed tonight trying to work out what this is. Try and work
it
out.
You know what we've read recently. Try and work it out. For me, so I audiobooked this one, but then I got impatient and also read it. So I had a physical book and an audiobook kind of going simultaneously, which always speaks to how much I'm enjoying it. I did prefer the audiobook. I thought the performance of the audiobook was excellent, and I thought it gave the tone to Elizabeth Zott really beautifully. And yeah, I really enjoy, I did probably prefer it as an audio book, but I was impatient. And basically it's, if I want to read before I go to sleep, I always read a physical book rather than listen to an audio book. Otherwise, audio book is like
a busy, I listen to an audio book at night if I need to fall asleep.
I actually did that the other week. Mary Stewart book
I listened to.
I can't remember what it was recently, but there was an audio book that I listened to recently that I had to keep jumping back and work out until I was in it. And I was like, I do remember what it was. I can't remember if we've reviewed it yet. But yes.
The book you cried in, or the book that you were sleeping to.
The book I was sleeping to.
Oh, you've mentioned it.
So yeah, I loved it. Highly recommend. Great recommend, Becca. Didn't rate the TV show, but I would love to hear your thoughts since you got all the way through both multiple times. Amy, what did you think of Lessons in Chemistry?
Well, I'm going to start with the TV show because it's a segue from that. I think the TV show that, yeah, you are right. It's, you know how sometimes we watch things and we go, I think the person who did this only read a synopsis.
Yeah.
And they didn't, like when we watched the first season of Bridgerton and we were like, you don't understand the
You
books.
Don't understand how this works.
You actually don't understand the tone of the storytelling.
Yeah.
And I think the tone in the book of Lessons in Chemistry is like, not captured or communicated effectively in the TV series. It's the TV series is very much about almost like deliberate feminism.
Yeah, right.
Where like she's aware of what she's doing.
Yeah.
But in the book, it's actually not about that. It's about family and a journey and
she stands
like,
up for herself because she believes you should, and she believes all people should be all valued. People,
but she's not.
But she's not out to try and start a movement or, you know, she just wants to be left alone in a lab.
But there's like a moment where there's a, you know, a fantastic scene where there's a woman in the audience who she's been told by Walter, no interactivity, because she always takes questions from the audience.
Yeah.
And this woman asks her a question and Elizabeth is like, you've got a brain. ask the questions and it's like, well, what do you do? Oh, nothing. I just stay at home.
Yeah.
That's stupid. Go to and get work, educated yeah, get and do job, something. Yeah. And it's less because Elizabeth is like being a feminist.
Icon.
It's more because she's like, well, you're not fulfilling your full potential. And
what a waste.
Yeah. So, yeah, that doesn't really come across.
She's
the
just
same
logical.
Way.
And it doesn't make sense because the ultimate part of it at the end of the day is things like deciding who is allowed to access things or not based on gender or race or class or birth heritage is so illogical. It is just, it defies logic. There is no logic
and
to
Elizabeth
it. It makes
is
no
so
sense.
Logical. She doesn't
She's
understand.
She's so scientific and logical.
Why
She's
wouldn't
like,
you?
If a woman, like a woman has a brain, so if she is as, like if that's what she's interested in, why not let her pursue it? We need everyone doing things they're interested in because that's how you progress society. It's good for everyone.
And that bit about her, I love that characteristic.
Me too.
Because she's a bit Franny Fisher.
She is a little bit like, I just don't care what anyone thinks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It won't hurt me. Like you can't hurt me attitude.
Yeah.
And she is, you said, unflappable and I just loved her for that. Like you sort of always knew where you were, but you never necessarily knew what she would say
Absolutely.
Or how she'd respond. And that made it really exciting to read.
Yeah.
But it did make me like through so much of it, particularly the, man, like everything, sizzle with frustration and fury at how she was being treated and squashed by society.
Yeah.
And I was just like,
yeah.
So often, I mean, it all works out. Like the ending is great. The way
ending is the catharsis in the ending is the most unrealistic part of the book.
But
you need it.
You do need it.
You've been on this journey, and I need to believe. And so, so it is a really, it's a really good ending as well.
The dog,
6:30. Could not love 6:30.
You're the dog speaking thing.
I love it.
It was a bit implausible.
No, I loved it. In the writing of the book, you spend some time in Mad's head, you spend some time in Elizabeth Zott's head, like in that third person. None of it is first person. It's always
third
person omnipresent narrator. And so for a big chunk of it, not a massive chunk, a small chunk, but a chunk I really valued, you spend it in 6:30's head. And it's about how 6:30 is understanding the world around
which is,
the world around
which
him,
is
which
great.
I love.
But that was just slightly a bit magical realism.
Absolutely, but I was there for it. I was really there. I was showing up for 6:30. Don't you worry about
that. I love
that.
His name. So good.
So good.
I've written down, I liked Pine. And I was like, oh, that's the Walter, because I forgot his surname.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason I wrote down his surname is because I wrote the sentence, I liked Pine, especially when he grew a sort of spine. So I'm very proud of my rhyme, which is why I didn't write his first name.
Great.
But I did like.
You probably cut that bit out of the final
I
letter.
Think I would.
No, I'm poking fun, leave it in.
It's fine. But like you said, the side characters
so
were
so beautiful. I was so
fantastic.
Invested. Which I think was also when I watched the first episode of the
TV series.
I was like, that side character has been fundamentally changed. I'm out. There was just there were little moments of fundamental change to characters that I was like, no, they're not ancillary side characters. I was as invested in their welfare and their arc.
So invested
in
Harriet.
So you can't just cut them. You can't just change Harriet and we're supposed to be okay about it.
No. And that's why I think it was sort of someone who read like an outline and was like, well, what's the budget we have? Like don't get me wrong. It's a solid show. But
I think
not the book.
It's not and the book I loved. I was too in love with the book. I was really excited to see it properly on a TV and already there were just some really fundamental moments that they were like, oh, well, we'll just change it from this to this and that'll be fine. But it fundamentally undercuts the characters and the arc that I wanted them to go on because it would reflect what was in the book. Sorry.
Yeah. The ending was predictable. Like you knew that we were going to get there. But the whole book I would describe as being very darkly funny.
So darkly funny. It is a really funny book. It's dry.
It's dry.
So dry. The humor is so dry and I loved it. Well, 6:30 is the best example that, you know, you've got two scientists who are, you know, together and whatever and naming their dog. And because the first thing she said when he asked her was 6:30, he's like, well, that's the dog's name. You know what I mean? Like, I love it. There's just this dry humor to it that was so good. Oh. And Mad is the same. Mad's name is Mad because that's what she wrote down in like a moment of, or that's what she said to the nurse when the nurse was like, what's the baby's name? And she was like, it wasn't until like 4 days later that I looked at it and was like, Mad, what? Like,
and you can't go back.
You can't go back. You can't go back and change it. No.
So I agree. It was really, Becca, this was a great recommend. It was a really enjoyable book. I'll reread it again. I thought too. Elizabeth Zott is just such a superhero of a character without actually being a superhero.
And it's definitely one I think we could almost own the audiobook of. I borrowed it from the library, but I think we could almost own this one. I really enjoyed the audiobook. It was fantastic.
You've heard it here, folks.
Really
loved
it.
That's a big investment.
It is. They're so expensive.
All right. Well, I'll put it on my list of things to buy you.
Thank you. That would be delightful.
Right. So this is a treasure from us. Lessons in Chemistry.
It is a huge treasure.
The book.
Loved it. The book. Yeah, not the show. Yeah, but that's fine. We're a book podcast. We're not a show podcast.
It's hard, isn't it, to capture tone? And
it's not impossible. That didn't even, it was.
No, it's not impossible.
I feel like it was trying to do something completely different. I'm not poo-pooing what it was trying to do. It just wasn't. Like, if I ask you to bake me a cake and you make the world's greatest chair, I still don't want to eat it. That's so I'm not saying it's a bad series. I'm just saying I wanted cake and I was given not cake.
You were given a biscuit. Something still in the same.
Yeah,
edible
I guess.
Group.
I could still eat it.
And it's a nice looking biscuit.
Absolutely. Very pretty biscuit. The biscuit had an excellent budget for like set and costume. We're very off topic. Sorry, everyone. We're a hot mess today.
Do you know who I pictured her as? Rosamund Pike.
Yes, me too.
Yeah.
And then when I went to watch it, I was like, oh, it's not Rosamund Pike.
Yeah.
Yes.
And when I take a step back and I picture the aesthetic of like the tile of the Apple TV show, but I think about the world of the book that I've read, I see Rosamund Pike. And
me
you
too.
Get that moment of friction when you're like, huh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Literally like almost Googling, did they swap her out? Was she in some initial press that I saw that I attached with the series? Like, yes, 100%. Like I can see, I can 100% see her in this role. And I'm like, oh no, you never had it. That was never your thing.
Unflappable.
Unflappable.
She's okay.
Got that vibe.
She does.
Thank you so much for spending some of your time with us today, even though we are a bit of a chaotic mess. Join us again next week where I can promise you spoiler-free recaps, reviews, and recommendations, but I cannot promise you that we will not continue to be a bit of a chaotic mess. And until that time, happy reading! And just a quick reminder here at the end of the podcast that we would love to hear from you. We want your recommendations, the good, the bad, the interesting, doesn't matter. Please reach out, send us an email at trashortreasurepodcast@outlook.com. Or we are also available at the world's most awkward Twitter handle, which Amy has to tell you about. Listen to our Twitter handle. It's the greatest.
It's @_treasure.
Doesn't that just roll off the tongue?
And with those encouraging words, tweet or email us.
We love to hear from you. Happy reading.
Cheers.